Ingrid Laguna is a multi-award-winning novelist and educator. Her books include Bailey Finch Takes a Stand, one of my favourites, Sunflower, Songbird, and Kit and Arlo Find a Way. Ingrid, you also have a new writing course, Writing with Ink. Tell me all about this.
Writing with Ink. Ink is actually my nickname. And so what I think will work is small classes. And what I think will work is genuine feedback from myself and from the other people's writing peers during the course. I wanted to share the things that I find to be really critical in writing. And that is that it's really hard to finish. It's really hard to persevere when the going gets tough. But all of these things can be done. And I think that if you know these things are important, and you know that it's normal to have self-doubt, and you know that it's normal that even though your idea might be inspired at the start, you are going to hit a point most likely that it doesn't feel inspired anymore.
Signing up, ingridlaguna.com, and be ready for those courses. Thank you so much, Ingrid, for putting this writing course on for writers.
Thanks so much for having me, Danny B. It's always such a pleasure. I love you.
Welcome to the 2024 series of the Words and Nerds podcast. I'm Danny B., author, publisher, and your podcast host. With over 1 million plays, thanks to you, listeners, readers, writers, creatives, teachers, librarians, and book lovers, thank you for coming along for the journey where we bring you relaxed and real conversations about writing and creativity. If you love an episode, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook at Danny V Words and Nerds Podcast. Or you can check out my brand new website designed by Gin & Co at dannyv.com.au. Welcome to the Words and Nerds Podcast, where we bring literary goodness straight to your ears. Today I welcome Belinda Morell, one of Australia's most prolific writers. Some of her work includes the Sun Sword series, Pippa's Island series, Lulu Bell series, and today we're going to talk about the Daredevil Princess series. So many different series. We'll have to talk about that too. Welcome back to the podcast, Belinda.
Thank you so much, Danny. I'm so thrilled to be here.
I love these little books. I'm one of these people who love the feel of books as well and the weight. And these are just beautiful books to hold. And they've got, you know, these gorgeous covers. They're just really lovely.
I love the embossing.
Yeah, the embossing is fantastic. So not only do I love reading books, I actually really like the feel of them and the weight of them in my hand. So these are very pleasing to the touch, Belinda.
I love seeing kids in bookstores where they pick up a book that they love and they hold it to their
yes.
heart.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
It is. I do that a lot. I'm guilty of that myself. Let's start with an elevator pitch. Maybe for the whole series, if you like, or however you would like
Absolutely.
To do that.
Absolutely. Well, The Daredevil Princess is about Princess Tilly, who's brave and bold, clever and curious, daring and very determined. And she's solving mysteries in the Queendom of Blumenfeld. So it's just as well she's so daring and determined because there's lots of trouble brewing there. So she has a great best friend called Honey Blossom, the talking unicorn, and two adorable dachshunds.
I love that's a great elevator pitch, by the way. And, you know, what drew me to this, and, you know, I'll talk about my little reader at home in a minute, but I loved Daredevil Princess, you know, that juxtaposition between the two. It's a real spin from the narrative of saving the princess from the castle, you know, Mario Kart, fairy tales, et cetera, et cetera. So was this kind of, you know, your inspiration for this, flipping that narrative on the damsel in distress?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. I grew up loving fairy tales, but I suddenly realized that, yes, it was all about, you know, Prince Charming saving the gorgeous princess in the tower or whatever. And so my daughter, Emily, when she was younger, she loved dressing up in princess gowns and tutus, but she'd always wear them with her muddy riding boots. And she'd love to do cartwheels and she'd fight with swords and bows and arrows. And so she loved that adventure, climbing trees in this gorgeous little princess outfit, a tiara and tutu and muddy riding boots. And so that was the inspiration for the Daredevil Princess.
I love that. I'm just sad that we're not doing that as adults. And I think we need to change that, Belinda. I think we need to go out in our tutus and our muddy boots and go and climb some trees. Actually sounds very cathartic.
Oh, I've been visiting bookstores the last couple of weeks and I've been taking my tiaras and all these booksellers are, yes, I'll wear a tiara. Let's play princesses and let's play with the unicorn and the dachshund. Oh, so it's been so much fun.
We need to implement this more in real life. As a little side sort of conversation, when I went to Taylor Swift, that's what everyone was wearing. There was glitter and there were boots and there were hats and there were, I was like, why aren't we dressing like this every day? Just a question, ladies.
Why aren't we dressing like this every day? I think
gorgeous.
We need to.
Yes.
Wear your tiara every day, I reckon. Now, what I loved about this series as well, it has goblins and it has unicorns and all these fantastical characters, which I think sort of make this kind of sweet but sassy book really interesting as well. Tell me about sort of the fantasy element of the series.
Well, I have always been obsessed with mythical creatures, whether it's unicorns, dragons, flying horses, whatever it might be, and especially things like goblins, that sort of mischief and the naughtiness of them. It's just so much fun. And so a lot of this world was inspired because when I was in my 20s, I went off on my big overseas adventure and I worked as a stable girl on this farm in Germany. And it was like living in a fairy tale. The farmhouse was 400 years old. The little village down the road was like a gingerbread little town with cobbled alleys. And there was this absolutely beautiful royal palace in Coburg, which was the local royal town. And I just felt like I was living in a fairy tale. So when I started drawing on this idea of creating a modern fairy tale, but with a really modern twist, I was inspired by this sort of German little village that I lived in when I was in my 20s. And it was surrounded by, you know, ancient forests, and I rode horses every day. And yes, so that was the inspiration for the world.
I'm very jealous of this experience. Houses that look like gingerbread, cobblestone roads. I'm very jealous about the day when you were a stable girl. And interesting, whenever you speak to writers, they always have such interesting backstories about themselves.
Yeah, I think travel is a really big thing for me. And I was lucky enough to spend 5 months in Europe last year because I won the Society of Women Writers Diary Award.
So congratulations.
Thank you. It was incredible. And so we spent 3 months in North Devon sort of frolicking on the moors and doing all these amazing things. And I went back to Germany to stay on the farm. Oh, and my daughter came and met me there,
wow,
my family. And so we sort of did all these fairy tale things while we were there.
That's cool. So memory is a weird thing, right? Did it sort of match your memory when you went back, or was it a bit different?
Yeah, it was a little bit different. I think everything seemed much more it was quite amazing because when I lived there, the East German border was just up the road, so you couldn't go past the magical forest because there's a big fence there.
Magical
and now
forest.
You go there and it's this beautiful divine little village just sort of a couple of k's up the road. So it was really lovely to go back there again and meet all my friends. They're all a little bit older than they were when I was 22.
Funny that. Well, if you ever organize a writer's retreat, count me in. That sounds amazing.
So beautiful.
Now, we all love kids' feedback on kids' books. And my daughter,
yes,
she is 9 and not a huge reader because she'd rather be, you know, doing gymnastics and hanging upside down, etc. So unlike my son, who's obsessed by books, she's kind of dips in and dips out. But when I sort of showed her these, I was like, oh, look at this, because she's a bit of a daredevil. She took one and said, oh, yeah, I'll have a look, you know, very non-committal, and then read it in a day.
Oh, fantastic.
So
love
good,
to hear that.
Great feedback on the book. But I just wanted to know, you know, when you're engaging kids, I mean, as a children's writer, it's really hard, I think, to sort of know how you're engaging kids, and this definitely worked for my daughter. So when you're writing, and I mean, I know you're writing about mythical characters, which are cool, and these great worlds, but what is it that you like to include in your books that you think this is really going to get them in and keep them reading?
Oh, I think it's about characters that you fall in love with. And some of the kids I've spoken to said they absolutely love Honey Blossom, the golden unicorn, because he's a male unicorn with the hilarious name of Honey Blossom. And then he's really snarky and he's sassy and he's actually quite rude, so he's sort of, you know, has a lot of attitude, and I just love writing that character because I just, you know, he's always standing up to the authority figures, and poor little Princess Tilly's always getting into trouble and he's standing up for her. So yeah, it was this idea of mixing, really, you know, trying to introduce humor and magic. And then the other element of fun I really enjoyed was Princess Tilly's dad's like a mad scientist, a bit like my dad, and his experiments always go terribly wrong with hilarious consequences. And so I loved writing those scenes as well.
I love all of that, and all of that makes sense now, I think. You know, engaging those kids with characters, because character's everything, right?
Yes, it is. And then yeah. I really love a setting, so this exotic setting of Blumenfeld and Rosenberg and this sort of German feel to it. My publisher had to make me pull back a little bit on naming everything with German names, and she's like, what have you had to say for, you know, and I really wanted to draw on that sort of fairy tale elements of Germany and that sort of, you know, Middle European castles and palaces and the royalty and play, have a lot of fun with that idea, but make her a very modern girl. So Princess Tilly's always running late. She's always getting into trouble. She slides down the banisters, she climbs down trees, she runs away in the middle of the night to try and solve the mystery. So she's always doing the wrong thing and getting into trouble for it. So she's, to me, a very modern young lady in this old-fashioned kind of world.
Yeah, I love that. I love that juxtaposition. Now, you have been writing for, great prolific career, and your books, so many series, as I mentioned before, and particularly Lulu Bell, I think there's about 13 books in that series.
Exactly 13 books.
So what is the secret to a successful series?
Oh, I think it's thinking about your inner child and thinking about what kids really love and sort of drawing on that. And I spend a lot of time going out to schools and talking to kids and seeing what they like, asking them questions. And the other thing I love is getting letters from kids. So I get lots and lots of letters, and then they tell me what they love about the books and
Oh, I
what they
love
wish
that.
they had more of. And so I always read those letters and think, right, okay, how can I do more of that? Or just that feedback, I think, is wonderful.
Oh, I love
And I
that.
think it's sort of being really aware of, in a way, being quite strategic about the market and thinking about what's happening, because, like anything, fashions come and go, and sometimes there's a gap in the market for junior fiction, and other times it's middle grade. And I like to do different things. So I like to experiment with my writing. So I think I'd get bored if I wrote nothing but junior fiction forever. So it's nice to sort of flit around between middle grade, upper middle grade, lower middle grade, junior fiction. I've even written a couple of picture books, but a long time ago. So yeah, so I think that's the secret to why I love it so much.
Yeah, and different ideas lend themselves to different stories and therefore different age groups and different even lengths of story,
Yes.
I love
Yeah,
that.
absolutely. And the other thing I think has been wonderful is I've had this really long collaboration with my publisher, So Walton at Penguin Random House. And so we've been working together for about 19 years, I think.
Wow. So
And
2005, wasn't it, when you started
yes,
working with them? That's
exactly.
incredible.
Yes.
Well, we need to unpack this because I think I find this very interesting. People, give feedback on the podcast, love to hear about from new writers, but also really are interested in how the industry's changed over the years, what it's
Oh
like working
gosh.
with one publisher
Yeah.
for 19 years, because authors have different experiences. Some have multiple publishers and some have one, and this amazing relationship that you have with Zoe. So tell me how that's sort of shifted and changed from then to now.
Well, I think I first met Zoe at the Sydney Writers Festival, and actually she'd worked with my sister. So my sister Kate introduced me to Zoe. And so Zoe asked me had what I was working on, and I gave her my quick little very poor elevator pitch, and then she said, send me your manuscript. And I was so naive. I had absolutely no idea how the publishing industry worked, and I did the number one no-no, which was I put my whole manuscript in a sparkly red glitter bag and had it couriered to her. And then later I read, whatever you do, never do that. I went, oh well. It seemed to work.
I was about to say, it seemed to work out for you eventually.
It did. So read that first manuscript, and then a few weeks later she rang me up and said, I love it, and how do you feel about signing a three book deal? And that was a sequel
Wow.
trilogy, and those books are still in print and still sell really well, and I still get letters from kids saying how much they love them. So yes, and so we've worked together on well over 35 books in that
Wow.
time.
And I'm assuming you don't still send her your manuscript in a glittery red bag.
No. In fact, I'm very lucky now. All I do is I send her we get together and I send her a little synopsis of some ideas, and then we discuss them. And so I generally sign the contract on those ideas. And then and so it's great because she helps me shape them, and she we talk about maybe three or four or five ideas, and she goes, no, maybe yes, oh, I love that one.
I
And
love
whenever she
that.
gets excited and goes, I love that one, I know that's the one that is going to be the winner.
So you've
So
got the idea, and when you pitch the idea, are you clear whether it should be JFIC or middle grade or somewhere in between? And does that sometimes shift and change depending on your conversations?
yeah, it does a little. So the first idea for The Daredevil Princess was actually a meeting I had with Zoe a few years ago, and Lulu Bell had done brilliantly well, and I was writing middle grade. I love writing middle grade fiction, and then I was writing some fantasy, and Zoe said, oh, have you ever thought about maybe writing junior fiction with the fantasy elements? And I went, that's a good idea. And I just let it mull away. And then I kind of came up with about five or six sort of concepts that I pitched to Zoe. And she went, The Daredevil Princess. I love that one. I love that one. And so I started working and developing that one.
I can see why she loved that. How many words around about is a Daredevil Princess?
About 7,000
Okay.
words. And Lulubelle was 7,000 words. And Zoe did say, oh, maybe they could be a tad shorter, but I'm not very good at writing terribly short.
I
So they
did
can
hear
have
there's,
seven.
yeah, I did hear there's a bit of a shift of less word count getting a little bit less for each genre.
Yes. Well, that was what Zoe suggested. And then she said, okay, well, let's just make them more heavily illustrated and have lots of fun with the font and sort of, have breakout texts and just lots of play around with them and have lots and lots of fun with them. And I loved that idea. I love the way we've got the larger font for some of the words and particularly when we've got sort of lots of sounds and things like that. It's
Yeah,
great.
and there's a lot of space in the book too, I think. You know, the chapters take up a whole page. So all that kind of design stuff is really important for, you know, the reader's accessibility, I think. So, yeah, it's
And
really
I think
cool.
Rebecca Crane has done the most amazingly beautiful job on the illustrations. They're so good. I just love them.
Yeah, the covers are beautiful. That you're sort
Yes.
of just drawn to the cover and you want to you it's a good cover when you want to touch it and open the book.
Exactly. And she there was a few things where I'd written the story one way, and then Rebecca had slightly interpreted it differently, and I went, oh no, but I love that illustration. Oh, I'll just change the text. Yeah, I
That's
did that a few
fantastic.
times.
Oh, that's really cool. And I love that collaboration between author and illustrator because things can change or be enhanced or improve or,
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
change things completely. So, yeah, I love that collaboration. I think it's great. Now, 19 years,
Yes.
same publisher.
Yes.
What have you learned about the industry?
Oh, well, I think when I first started, I remember when I was working on my first book with Zoe, and she did say to me, we're going through the editing process, and she said, if I suggest making a change, it's probably because I feel like it's not working, or, please try and be respectful of anything that I suggest in my edit. And now, if Zoe suggests anything, I just go, yes, absolutely. I just trust her implicitly. Whereas I think in the beginning, I'd go, but I really like the way I wrote that. And I was always, conscious of editing the work to make it as professional as possible. But I think now that I don't even think about it, I just go, yes, okay, let's change it or come up with another way of doing it that sort of meets the whatever it was that was missing when Zoe looked at it. So
So
I
there's that
really
real
think
trust there
yeah, absolutely.
between you and the
And
publisher.
sometimes, because I also teach a lot of aspiring writers, and some of them have said to me, oh no, I would never change. If the editor would never make me change my manuscript. And I'm thinking, oh, you're just missing out on that amazing skills that publishers have. They know the market, they know the trends, they know what's happening out there, and they can see things that aren't working that you might not be able to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes you become too close to your manuscript and you might have,
Yes.
you know, read it or edited it or whatever a million times. And it's really good to see fresh eyes. And I've been that way since the beginning as well. If, you know, the publisher's got some advice or some opinion, they know more than I do.
Absolutely,
So,
absolutely. I,
you know.
and sometimes it's there in my head. I think it's there on the page, and they can, and no, it's not there actually.
Yeah, and it's weird
Okay,
sometimes
whoops.
when, yeah, you can read your manuscript over and over again and you won't sort of under you won't pick out, you know, the obvious. So, you know, I gave one of my early manuscripts to one of my friends who's a writer, and it was like, great characters, really funny, but where the hell are they? And so I put no setting in. I was like,
Yes.
oh, because I was so focused on the character, they
Yes.
were just floating in air apparently. So it's really interesting to get that layer of feedback on top that I don't even know how you miss it, but sometimes you do, particularly as a new writer, I think.
Yeah, I think you do, and or you focus too much on things, and so sometimes I can get a bit focused on, if there's some sort of theme I'm trying to explore or some sort of message I want to get across, and she's going, yeah, well, let's just put down the shovel and pull back a little bit, or like I hope I don't do that very often, but I know occasionally I've done that and went, oh yes, of course, it had to be fun. This is all about being fun.
It's funny how we get into our obsessions and we make sure that part's right and you just neglect that other bit that You haven't really thought about it. It's really interesting. So that's what you've learned about publishing, which I love, because I think editing and taking on feedback is just part of being a creative, you know. And I
And
think,
that collaboration too, that it was in the beginning, I thought it was my book, my work. And now I realize everything is a collaboration between the
absolutely.
illustrator, the designer, your amazing editors, your amazing publishers, and your
Everyone.
readers.
Yeah, and it just goes through so many hands, you know, when you look at how publishing works, it just goes through so many hands, and I just find that so interesting. And you know, the love and care and time it takes to create a book, I just love that, because you know, publishers just honor the process, and I love
They
that, you
do.
know.
Yeah. And they're just as passionate about these books as I am.
Absolutely. I know I get very excited when I've been involved in publishing a book. It's like when you finally get it, it's like, oh, it's so gorgeous. I love this.
Oh, I sent through to the team today. I had a whole lot of reviews have come in over the last week, and which, as you know, for children's publishing, adult books get reviewed much more than kids' books. And so I got all these wonderful reviews. So I was sending them all through, and everyone was just jumping up and down with excitement that, it was such a lovely to get that, be able to share that success with your team.
Absolutely. And I heard this before as well, which I thought was really interesting. It's like, well, you have to promote your book as an author, because it's not just your book. You know, it belongs to the publisher, the illustrator, the designer, the editor, everyone who had a hand in it. And if you're not, you know, sort of trying to get your book into as many hands as possible, you're not honoring all of their work and all of their time and their care and love they've put into it too. I really love that perspective on it.
Well, I think actually that marketing is something that's changed a lot in the time I've been working as a writer. I think when I first started, I remember my publisher saying, "Well, if you could just spend one day a month, doing things, whether it was school visits or, of course, there was no social media then. That was how long ago it was, and maybe popping into a bookstore and signing things, or it was all very, it was quite simple then back then, I think. And now I think there's a lot more pressure and a lot more expectation that you'll spend a huge amount of your time, especially when the book comes out, marketing and doing social media and trying to think of interesting ways to share the message about your book. So yeah, I think that's changed enormously.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you might spend half the time writing and half the time trying to get your book out into the world. It's very
Oh,
interesting how much
definitely.
time that takes, and it doesn't always come natural to writers or creatives,
No,
because you're
because
doing
a
it on
lot.
your own, you
Oh,
know.
exactly.
And then all of a
And
sudden you've got to go, "Hi, world."
Well, I think so many writers are generally quite introverted people because they love spending a lot of time by themselves in their own heads. And then suddenly you've got to switch over to being a rah-rah tap dancer. It doesn't come naturally.
It's interesting. It is an interesting process, and it has changed. And you know, you have social media and you're expected to use it, but then sometimes I think, well, social media, I'm just speaking to the converted here, right?
Yes, I know.
I'm speaking to people who love books, or are here because they love books. They're, you know, gonna go to your book launch, whatever. So it's like, how do you then go out of that, you know, out of that little gorgeous bubble that we live in? But it is harder for kids' books. It is a lot harder. And that's why I think, you know, your school visits, just going there and going to the source and getting your book in their hands or getting their feedback is just invaluable.
Yes, I think that's it's so important. To spend that time in the school. And it's a two-way communication as well. So you're telling them about your books and sharing, I think really sharing a love of literature, inspiring kids to love reading.
And that's what school is. You know, most days are pretty much the same at school, you know, from my memory, and my kids at school now. But then you get these special days where you go and meet an author, or you go to an incursion, or you do something special, and they're the days that you remember for years and years afterwards,
Yes.
you know. So
Yes.
they're really
So that's one
important, those
thing
days.
that I've had that I've having had such a long career, is that I get these beautiful letters from young adults, and often they're young women who are about 18, 19, 20, and they write to me to say that I was their favorite author when they were 11 or 12. And
That.
that they say things like, "Oh, I am the young woman I have become because of your
Oh,
books
that's
and because of your
gorgeous.
writing." And honestly, it just reduces me to tears. And then I said that to my publisher, and then she's in tears.
And the
It's
power of
so
books, right?
beautiful.
The power of books cannot be
Exactly.
denied.
Absolutely. And I've been at a book signings at bookstores, and someone will walk past and they'll turn around and go, "Oh, I remember you. You're my favorite author." And it's so beautiful to have that sense of them still remembering the books after many years.
But you do take childhood books with you, I think, you know, whatever we read, as a young age, you take them with you all the time, and then you try and give your kid those kids those books that you enjoyed, but they're just so different, you know, those books from the 80s and 90s to what they are now. Don't always translate.
No, they don't. A bit like Enid Blyton, or you know, they just seem so old fashioned now.
Yeah, and mine was a Judy Blume. I read a lot of Judy Blume when I was growing up, and I just don't think my daughter would be into it. No, but we did bond over the Babysitter's Club. We did watch the Netflix series, so that was nice.
Yes. Yeah, I think they're much more, I think books have become much snappier.
Yeah.
I guess our attention span, it's like when you read Jane Austen or something, and it's beautiful, but, you know, it's so, in a way, long-winded, and these beautiful long descriptions. And I think now you've got to be much snappier.
Yeah. You certainly need to be in the mood to read Jane Austen. It takes me about 3 chapters, and I'm totally in after that, but it does take me 3 chapters to adjust. And then I just have a complete Jane Austen envy, and I'm like, why don't I sit around in a drawing room drinking gin? Like, why isn't that my life?
I know, she just I think loves Jane Austen. I went to the Jane Austen Festival when I was in England last year, and there was hundreds and hundreds of people, men and women and children, dressed up in Regency gear.
Oh, I love that.
And I felt so underdressed because I'm not good enough, really. And so special.
Oh, there is a bit of a thing about the Jane Austen period, isn't it? Watching the films or just, you know, reading the books about that time. Very romanticised, I think. But, yeah, I get that bug as well when I read them.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I'd like to actually live in that time.
I know. When you think about the reality of it, it's not that great. But there is a romantic sort of side to it that you think, oh, you know, carriages and ball gowns and sitting in the drawing room just socialising all day. Like, that's my dream. That's my dream.
With a few servants doing all the hard work.
That's right. Now, I love this question because not only is it why do you write, but for you, why do you write for kids? Because I think books for kids are really special, because I think when you write for kids, it's a really big responsibility, because you are hopefully turning them into lifelong readers who become readers as adults, who then, you know, encourage their kids to be readers. So it's quite a big responsibility that the books we put into kids' hands are going to engage them and be interesting and let them into that world of reading. So why do you write for kids?
It comes back to what we were talking about before, and that is that I think if you asked anybody, if they had to name a book that changed their life, they would name a book that they read, I would say, when they're about 10 or 11 or 12, or as a child anyway. And so I really believe that books have the power to change lives and to change, thereby change the world. And that's why I love those letters I get from those young women who say that reading a book at that point in their life, for whatever reason, changed their lives and shaped them into the adults that they became. And so I just don't think, I love reading adult books, but I just don't think if I wrote adult books, you would have that same impact, or I wouldn't feel like I was changing the world, which I know sounds very grand, but
I think it's great. But there is this magic in kids' books, you know, absolutely. There's magic in them. So,
The idea of the Daredevil Princess. So when my daughter was young, and it's changed a lot now, but when she was first reading, all the books had male protagonists, all of them. And then I suddenly realised that to get a really good female protagonist, she had to go back to, say, Anne of Green Gables, or, you know, something that was set a long time ago. And so I suddenly went, right, that's it. I am going to write books that have really strong, fabulous girl protagonists that they can aspire to be like, because you cannot be what you cannot see.
Yeah,
and I really felt that my daughter couldn't see that in the books that she was reading. She couldn't see strong, brave, bold girls.
I see that now too, because I'm sort of in the business of humorous books, developing humorous books. I see that as well, that humour is often reserved for male protagonists.
Yes.
And, you know, so I'm sort of in the same space as you. Well, you know, I'm going to show you that girls can be fun and funny and gross, and they can do all of those things. I've got a daughter, so I know too well. But, you know, it's I don't know why humour has been reserved for the boys for so long. So I'm kind of in that mindset too, trying to find these funny stories for kids. And I think maybe that's why my daughter hasn't become the reader that my son has become, because I do think she finds it hard to find still herself in books. So I think, although, you know, you've done a wonderful job and you keep doing so, I think there's more work for us to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there was a study that was done only a year or two ago that showed that still two-thirds of protagonists of boys that
Wow.
mothers in books either don't speak or they bake. That's all they
Oh,
do.
don't even
They
get me
bake.
started on
And,
mothers, Belinda. Don't get me started on mothers.
I've got my soapbox right here.
Now the podcast is going for another 45 minutes.
I know. It would get me so riled, and that the boys would talk twice as much as the girls, and they'd be the heroes, and the girls would be the wing girl, and
Yeah.
all of that.
And
So,
mothers are the fun killers. You know, they're the sensible ones, stopping the fun, reining it in, being sensible. No, you can't do this, you can't do that. And I was like, oh. And that was the inspiration for my first picture book. So I'm like, no. Women are much more than that, you know, and especially as mothers, you're apparently just a mother now, and you just have to just be a mother. And I love being a mother, don't get me wrong, but there are so many, you know, so much more to people than just, you know, the little people that they've produced. And so, yeah, that message is loud and clear, I think, for me. And still, I think because it's so embedded into our society, like I still read so many manuscripts that have, you know, mum reining in the fun, or mum in the kitchen, or mum silent, or, you know,
Silent,
those,
that's the one that makes
yeah.
me mad.
And mum baking. And look, I cook, I'm a mum, I have to cook, so we all eat, but I don't think we need that represented repeatedly in books.
Constantly,
You know,
no.
I think we can do other
No.
things that are a little bit more interesting. So I'm glad we're on the same mission, Belinda.
Yes, it's so important, I think. And also to represent the sensitive kind men and
Absolutely.
fathers and boys, and for them not always to be the male chauvinist pigs as well, because there are
That's
some
right.
beautiful men in my life and I'd like to
Absolutely.
represent that as well.
No, absolutely. And there is, I mean, I just think in terms of feminism and toxic masculinity, we're living in the best time. You know, the Barbie movie and feminism and Taylor Swift. And I just feel this shift, you know, and not putting up with that toxic masculinity, you know, in life anymore. And I just feel like there's this real shift against it. And so I think, yeah, I'm hoping our books can also reflect and represent this great change, which I think, you know, I'm so glad I'm born in this time, that I'm part of this sort of change that's happening. So I think that's really
Oh,
inspiring.
absolutely. And I loved bringing up kids in this time so that they can be very conscious
Yes.
of this, and so that my daughter can be brave and bold and strong, and that my boys can be kind and sensitive and strong. And
Yeah, we can just be human, you know? We
yes.
can just be human and be all these different things that aren't dictated by, you know, how you're born in the world or how you identify. So, yeah, it's really interesting. And also, you know, bringing up a son to be a feminist. You know, it's not just for
Yes.
girls, you know?
No,
It's not just for
exactly.
girls. So, yeah, it's really interesting. My poor kids in my soapbox.
Well, they need that, I think. It sort of stimulates these really interesting conversations where,
Yeah.
if you don't talk about it, then they're not just going to absorb it all by
Yeah,
osmosis.
that's right. That's right. But you see it sometimes. You know, they're obviously, my kids are still young, but sometimes you see it sometimes, and you go, oh, like what I believe and what I rant on about, like it sinks in here and there, you know? So I really like that because it still happens. You know, it still happens in society and schools and conversations. And I think it's our job to sort of call it out. Well, I feel like it's my job to call it out.
Oh, I think so, absolutely. And I've had people say to me, "Oh, your books always have girls as protagonists. Like, aren't you worried that you're not going to sell as many books? Or aren't you worried that, shouldn't you be doing this or that?" And I just go, "No, loud and proud, very, very happy to."
Well, again, we have to encourage our kids not to just to read the protagonist that the gender they are, you know. I've deliberately just given my son books. This is a cool book. This is a cool
Yes.
book. Whether it's a female protagonist or a male has been absolutely irrelevant. And he now reads everything. You know, he won't
Yes.
just pick up that traditional book with a boy protagonist on the front because I just didn't make a deal of it. And I went, no, this is a cool book.
Yeah,
Read
I
it.
think that is so important because I think that's where a lot of that toxic masculinity
Yeah.
comes from, is because they don't believe girls' stories are important.
That's right. That's right. Or they should be reading a girly book, which is, you know, ridiculous. So I'm so glad that, you know, together with all of our other author friends and creatives, we're changing the world, Belinda.
Yes, one
One book, one
at a time.
social media post at a time. It was funny. I'll just mention this before we go. I posted this thing about, you know, body positivity. I'm really big on this because I know my daughter at the moment thinks she's beautiful and wonderful as she should, but research says that when girls are 13, they start to hate themselves, which just breaks my heart, right? So I did this post about body positivity, and then all day it was so fabulous. I got these messages from these women, mothers who were like, I haven't worn a bikini in 10, 15, 20 ever years, whatever. And today I just got in my bikini and I went in the pool with my kids. And I was like, How awesome
Isn't
is
that just
that?
lovely?
You know
I
what I mean?
know.
Like, how
I saw
awesome
some
is
of them. That
that?
was great.
Yeah. So I just think, and women have been pitted against each other. This conversation's taken a turn, Belinda. But women have been pitted against each other for so long. And I think finally we're like, no, nope, we're not doing that. We're gonna all gonna support each other, and we're gonna have each other's backs, and we're gonna celebrate each other and be really body positive and positive. And it's just a great shift. And I think it does lead itself into your book, that daredevil princess and that girl who can be, whoever she wants to be. So I think that's fabulous.
Oh, and as all little girls should, and all little boys should, and
Absolutely.
I think it's wonderful. And I also love the way the children's book industry is so supportive of other writers and
Oh.
of each other. And it's just so great to have that tribe behind you.
Absolutely. I think we should just all take the creative community and all just go to Mars and just
Yes.
leave everybody else back on Earth. We'd have a pretty good system, I reckon.
I think so. Oh no, it's absolutely great. So
It's a
it's so
wonderful
much fun
community.
getting out and celebrate. It's so after all the time you spend working away by yourself to get out and see the books in the world and get out and celebrate it. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, I love that. And I love watching other people, as you mentioned, celebrating other people's books as well. And there's that really sort of let's be a cheerleader. And I think we know how hard it is to get a book published. We know how hard it is to write a book. We know how hard it is, all those things. So I think when we see someone have success or have a book published, we're like, yes, because we know the challenge and the difficulties and how hard it can be just to go from, no idea or bringing an idea into a beautiful book. So I think we all appreciate that.
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for that chat. That did take a little bit of a turn, but I think it was important. That was not in my
What's
questions, but I just
great
thought
about.
I'm the worst person of questions. I write them just so I feel better about the world, and then I never use them. So,
That's what's so lovely about this. It's a great conversation that triggers ideas and fascinating things to talk about. So
Yeah,
thank you so much, Jenny.
absolutely. I love that because it's just sort of this organic path that you go on and you think you're going in one direction. I like these conversations to be like as if we were at a cafe. So
Exactly.
wish we were actually.
Oh, it's so lovely to see you, Danny.
You too. Thank you so much. And Daredevil Princess, beautiful series. Get yourself a few copies. They feel beautiful. Just like feel them and touch them.
Gorgeous.
Thanks, Belinda.
Thanks so much, Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Gin and Co, author website design specialists. If you want a beautiful and functional website to promote your books and brand, reach out to Gin today. His work includes tailored, expertly designed professional author websites. I finally have a website I'm proud to share. And we've got a special offer for Words and Nerds listeners. Reach out today and get a free domain name and website hosting for the first year. You can get their website essentials package, includes domain name, website hosting, backup and security free for the first year with any website purchase. This is valued at $330 a year. Choose a website designed to bring your author brand to life. You can find more details about this special offer at ginand.co/wordsandnerds.